back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I promise I'm going to get the logo up on one side of the screen or the other before this is all over with. Some new equipment, a new baseball season, a new wide receiver for the Ravens as well. We'll get to that a little later on. Luke Jones joins us now from high on a hill in Shrewsbury. Oh, it's brought to you by our friends in Wise Markets. We're going to be eating better. We're going to be spending less. We'll be telling you all about Wise all throughout April and into Easter time. And of course, you can find Luke at Baltimore Luke out on the Twitter and the Instagram and the LinkedIn and everywhere he is. Opening day is sort of next week when we all sort of get together in an orange feather and we drink and we eat and we're merry. But real opening day is this week. We are having guys come north. We are taking former womanizing pitchers from the Mets who are Cy Young candidates and shipping them in. All sorts of things are happening. And I'm hearing I'm going to figure out where Masson is on the cable dial before Thursday afternoon at Fenway Park. How are you, man? Happy opening day to you, even though we'll do another opening day next week. And I just hope we're not 0-5 or 0-6 when it really opens, right? So,
yeah, I mean, especially in this current era where you're rebuilding, you're hoping you're not returning home 1-5. And I mean, look, I think we all understand what this team's going to be once again this year. Not good, not good at all in the wins and losses department, but again, looking for those individual signs of progress. But it is baseball season, and you mentioned Masson. I mean, we were spoiled. We had two games on TV last week. I mean, go figure, but all kidding aside and all sarcasm aside, it is good to have baseball back. I think you and I have talked about it so much. You and I both being baseball guys at heart and knowing where we've been over the last calendar year, knowing at this time a year ago, we were lamenting baseball being shut down and having no idea when it was going to return. It is exciting. The notion of, even if it is 25% capacity, having fans back at the ballpark, that's exciting. You know, again, another sign towards normalcy, another sign of hope, another sign of that light at the end of the tunnel. But bringing it back for the Orioles specifically, you know, this is a team that's now a couple years into a very lengthy, very painful, very unexciting rebuild, but something that was necessary when you consider how the thing had just been burnt to the ground at the end of 2018. But, you know, you're at a point now where still a long way to go, but I think if you're willing to look, if you're willing to invest some time, you're starting to see more and more guys hitting the major league level that I think have a chance. And for me, it really starts with the outfield. When you look at some of the options they have there, you know, the pitching, you know, I think there'll be a lot of cringing there.
Well, on a night-by-night basis, that's going to be what kills you as a fan, are going to be 4.5-hour games where they give up 13 runs, legitimately give up 7 home runs because they have AAA pitching, and that, I'm being kind of kind. I mean, they probably have 5 major league pitchers, right?
Well, I mean, I think there's more potential in the bullpen, you know, as far as what you want to define as major league pitchers. I think they do have some good arms in the bullpen. Hunter Harvey injury aside, and of course, you know, he's not going to be on the table as an option until late May at the earliest with the oblique injury. But, you know, there's some arms there, but the rotation, you know, you have John Means in the opening day starter spot. Certainly someone who didn't have a great spring statistically, but if you watched him pitch last year and looked at the peripherals, threw harder, struck out more batters, pitched really well in September after a really rough start for him health-wise and personal life-wise with the passing of his father. But beyond him, you know, you're looking at, as you mentioned, alluded to, Matt Harvey, who is throwing harder than he has the last few years and, you know, came to Baltimore with, you know, some comments about Mike Elias and Sig Meidel and the analytics and the technology that they use as far as him trying to get his career back on track. But, you know, beyond those two, we found out on Sunday, Bruce Zimmerman, who is an Ellicott City native, you know, went to Loyola Blakefield, you know, local kid, had a cup of coffee late last year. He was part of that Kevin Gausman trade a couple years back with Atlanta. He pitched his butt off this spring. You look at his numbers, missing bats, throwing a little bit harder, really good command. He didn't give up a run in 9 Grapefruit League innings, only gave up 1 hit. So, but he's the number 3 starter right now. And let's be very clear, and we've seen this the last few years, even going back to the Buck Showalter, Dan Duquette era, we know that the starting 5 on opening day will probably look different in May. It will certainly look different in July, August, and September. But you know, when you do see someone like Bruce Zimmerman, when you see Dean Kramer, Keegan Aiken struggled this spring. He's back in Triple A for right now. I think we'll see him sooner rather than later, but I think,
well, there's going to be a shuttle. It's not like they're going to have 10 or 11 guys that are going to last 8 weeks around. I mean, it's just these guys aren't going to be good enough for there not to be a shuttle. Some of these guys are going to pitch their way out of the major leagues. If not injuries, then there's always injuries. And then you got to hope that somebody at AA and AAA steps up and earns a chance to get some innings on a team that that's going to win 50 or 60 games. Let's just call it what it is, right?
Well, let's call it what it is. And let's also keep in mind the factor that every major league team is dealing with this year. You just had a pandemic shortened 60 game season where you had to plan and cover for what, 540 innings. And now, whether you're a team like the Orioles who is rebuilding, wins and losses at the major league level clearly isn't their primary objective right now, but they're still trying to develop young pitchers. They're still trying to progress and get themselves closer to that end line of being a competitive baseball team again. So whether you're the Orioles or whether you're the Yankees or you're the Dodgers, you're having to manage now 162 games with on the heels of a 60-game season where even the most experienced pitchers pitched a fraction of the normal workload that they have. And then you have guys that you're mixing in, you know, maybe not so much the Orioles. You know, we're not going to see Grayson Rodriguez and DL Hall this year, for example. But how many teams are going to be counting on young guys and – whether you're talking quad A guys, whether you're talking prospects who didn't get a chance to pitch at all on a meaningful level last year, there's a lot of load management that's going to be a factor here. So the Orioles, to your point, because of the lack of quality established major league pitching, they're going to be cycling a lot of guys in, and that's nothing new. We've seen that for years now, going back to Buck Showalter with the Norfolk Shuttle and Dan Duquette. But
Your point, there's 1,400 innings here, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's simple math. And that's not to say that guys didn't work out on their own, but you and I both know it'd be the same way as, you know, you do radio or you're live at the Super Bowl or you're doing play by play, you know, whatever, you know, if you're a broadcaster, you're doing it compared to just practicing at home. That's not the same thing.
Well, I'm practicing at home right now, right. You know, I mean, just for the time being. You know.
Sure. But the point is, you know, that it's one thing to throw in your backyard or you get to get, you know, some guys got together with people in their local community and played on a sandlot and, you know, was able to log some innings and throw and try to throw hard and do max effort and all that. It's not the same as pitching minor league games.
I challenged Denny Nagel to wiffle ball last week. It's not the same. So
it's not quite the same. So I think that's something that from Mike Elias all the way to, any other GM in the league, any other manager, coaching staff in the league, there's a lot of trepidation. I think there's a very unsettling kind of feeling as far as how this season's going to go. I mean, we talked about it with the fact that baseball shut down for 3 months and then all of a sudden, okay, ramp back up for 3.5 weeks and now you're going to play a 60-game season. We saw pitchers have injuries. We saw a higher rate in some cases when you kind of try to analyze it. I think there's the same kind of concern this year as far as how do you bridge that gap? You know, guys who made 10 or 11 starts, they're going to go back to 30 just like that. You know, I mean, how do you handle that? So I do wonder if you'll see
the June and July dead arms going to exist this year that probably didn't last year.
Well, and I think how much of that and what I kind of theorize here, and I'm not alone in this assessment, I wonder if you're going to see teams leaning into more of these analytic type approaches of long relievers, two times through the order, not as much because of effectiveness, you know, once you get third time through the order, but even just as a way to manage innings. I think, and Brandon Hyde talked about this a lot with the Orioles relief pitchers, tried to stretch them out a little more. It might be, and you know, we know that there's the three batter minimum for relievers now, but you might have more and more managers and teams trying to manage this thing, looking at it and saying, you know what? I don't want my guy to be a three batter guy or a one inning guy. I might try to get five outs out of him, you know, or if you're talking about a guy who might be a two inning long reliever, he might be a three inning guy this year.
Well,
so
if we're going to warm him up, let's get him 42 pitches in the game instead of 16 pitches in the game. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much that's involved in that, but you know, the idea of if you're a relief pitcher and you've been a veteran relief pitcher is used to one inning and suddenly you're doing, you know, you're pitching one inning and then you're going and sitting in the dugout for 15 minutes and then you're coming out and get another out or two. Hey, that's a different dynamic.
Dude, the really good setup guys would throw eight pitches. Yeah. You know, I mean, they would come in. They would that first ball strike ground out, and they play pepper, and then you'd foul off one and then get a fly ball. You know, like literally the really good eighth inning pitchers never threw 15 pitches. Literally. Yeah.
Right, right. So I think what you're going to see, and again, talking about the Orioles in this context is different because so much of what they're doing at the major league level is kind of getting through it, so to speak. But I think what you are going to see, and the Orioles are doing this, or I expect them to do this, one, you know, by the time we get to opening day, we know what the 26-man roster is, all that. You know, they're five starters, and we know it's Means. We know that Matt Harvey's going to be the number two guy to start the year, you know, de facto, if you want to call him that. Bruce Zimmerman, I assume Dean Kramer and probably Jorge Lopez for those last two spots for right now, because Felix Hernandez has dealt with a sore elbow. Whether he's in long relief or they put him on the injured list to start the year. But I think you're going to see Wade LeBlanc in the bullpen as a longer guy. I think you're going to see those types of arms. They acquired Adam Plutko from Cleveland over the weekend. I think you're going to see one of the Rule 5 guys in the bullpen because they're both starters. And I think now they're probably going to pitch on the night when the Orioles are down 10-1. And it's either a position player or that guy. But I think you're going to see rather than
it's going to be that Ubaldo Jimenez role. Is that what you're saying?
Something like that.
If you're going to name it anything, you have to.
Yeah,
there's a Chris Davis role. We'll get to him in a minute too, because he apparently is, been put out to pasture. Yeah, tonight,
he's on a milk carton somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, Jimenez had that role for a good 2-3 years, right?
Sure.
And then Buck died with him. Oh my God.
Yeah, you're bringing up some painful memories there. No, but I think with the bullpen with. And assuming the Orioles are going to start with a 14-man pitching staff, and I think you're going to see a lot of teams. That's another thing. You know, the days of talking about, for years it was 10 or 11 pitchers, and then it was 11 or 12. And most recently it's been 12 or 13. Now, especially with this season, with the innings, the workload, just managing and navigating the season, whether you're a contender or a rebuilding club like the Orioles or Pittsburgh, I think you're going to see, at least to start the year, I think you're going to see 14-man pitching staffs and nine-man bullpens, or you're going to see six-man starting rotations and eight-guy bullpens. But I just think in those bullpens, rather than one, maybe two long relievers, I think you're going to see now three long relievers, if not four, and those middle relievers, those guys that are pitching in today's game in the fifth, sixth inning, I think those guys are going to be asked to give a little more length. And then, managers will still hope there are two or three high leverage guys at the end of the game, can be a little more readily available for those situations. But I'm fascinated to see not so much the Orioles pitching, because I think it's going to be a lot of cringeworthy moments and a lot of cringeworthy nights in that way, but to see how baseball navigates this, I think it's going to be really fascinating. And, understanding the investment involved, I think for the old school guys who miss complete games and miss eight inning outings even more and seven inning outings, I think you're going to see fewer and fewer of those, at least to start the year. I think because teams are really going to try to get their bearings and kind of see where they are with so many of these guys. Like I said, it's one thing to talk about even the guys who pitched in the 60-game season last year, but we know, teams are looking for younger guys to step up, but guys that spent all last summer at an alternate training site, or guys who weren't even there, or guys that were out of baseball, opted out and are trying to make a comeback now. There's just so much unknown. So I expect you're going to see even more player movement and more of the, shuffling from AAA and we'll see the Norfolk shuttle and those pitchers that in the bullpen that have options are going to be extremely valuable, I think, to all teams this year, more so than even how it's trended the last few years.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke, and Luke at WNST.net. He'll be doing the Orioles thing. I asked Ken Singleton about this when I had him on Baltimore Positive last week, just to give me a little primer for the other teams, right? Like, Singleton's big take out of all of this, and it's like I told him, I could bitch a Orange River from here, across the Chesapeake about how awful all this is. But Singleton's take was, all the other teams are going to come into Camden Yards. If you like baseball, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, the Devil Rays, there'll be interest in all of those other teams. Where are you on that after a season down last year? And certainly Tampa's pretty good. The Yankees are pretty good. I mean, the Dodgers have gotten better. The Padres have spent a ton of money. I mean, there are stories out there. The National League East is kind of an open story, right, where the Nationals, the Phillies, the Mets are trying to figure it out. The Marlins are on the come. All of these things are happening. But baseball, as much as I believe interest might be down, and I have and will all week and probably all season bemoan the advanced Saber stuff that I am obligated to learn to enjoy the game better, that Masson, I guess, I don't know if they have any strategy, but they should be trying to teach people like me about that kind of stuff so I can teach Dennis and Bill Cole and all my other old, you know, fart buddies to go to games again to understand the game better. But part of that is the other teams, the visiting teams, who the competition is, because I'm not so sure that I'm going to get all that interested in Matt Harvey, you know, as an Orioles fan, other than in a trade way. Give me a little primer for baseball right now, where the teams and the other teams we're going to be seeing coming in here, and what's expected of other teams not named the Orioles, where there are no expectations here.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to you begin with the AL East. I mean, you mentioned the Yankees, and I mean, obviously the Rays, you know, have made done what the Rays do when someone starts to get too expensive or someone's approaching free agency. You know, they make some moves and they get younger and they replenish. And that's one way that Mike Elias is trying to emulate the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, you certainly hope if and when the time comes that, you know, certainly they're investing more in major league payroll, but that's clearly not an objective right now. You know, whether you want to be cynical about that or not, it's reality. But I think you do look at also Toronto. Now the Yankees and the Blue Jays both dealing with some injuries going into the season. I think that's, you know, something to note, but there's a lot of talent in this division. I mean, and of course I'm giving you the Captain Obvious statement. That's been the case for the better part of, you know, 25 years. When, especially when you look at the Yankees and the Red Sox kind of rising again in the mid 90s, and for the most part, save a couple years here and there, have been right there. So, you know, the Red Sox,
well, they've outspent everybody since Peter stopped trying with David Segee. You know, the Yankees and the Red Sox have spent as much as the Orioles, the Blue Jays, and the Rays combined most years. Most years. If it's $200 million, the Orioles spend $100 and the Blue Jays spend $80. And the, you know, I mean, that's been the story. It's a financial story at heart. As much as Bud Selig and even you many times have said, well, there's parity and everybody can play, there's a whole different system being played here. You know, like, it's like rich and poor people in our country. It's just a different system being played. Now, whether you can compete or not, I've competed at AM radio for 30 years. I get it. I mean, I get competing with less resources, but I also think there's a weight that goes into that, and the gray hair will show you that, Luke, you know?
Yeah, but I would also say, even with all that money, those two teams have still done well down below with their farm systems. And that's, you know, the Red Sox maybe not as well. And you've seen the Red Sox have a few more of the valleys to go with their peaks.
But the money that gets spent on payroll is bad enough. Then there's the other money they spend on everything else, including academy scouting, hiring real baseball people as opposed to Sid Thrift and whatever the hell was going on here. And you think about the payroll gets reported everywhere, right? Like, everyone knows about luxury tax, if you know the game at all. What's never reported is how much is being spent on the rest of stuff. And that's where Jerry Jones would try to kill everybody, you know, by having 58 coaches and extra good hot tubs and extra good. That's where Mark Cuban, the NBA thing started to sort of, that's where Big Ten football is, right? We have better hot tubs. We have better weights. We have prettier girls. We have bigger dorms. We, you know, all of those things that don't really speak to payroll, maybe do it at college. But for the Orioles, one of the real dirty secrets here, not is how awful they have been at all of that, or where Peter was, quite frankly, anti anything not American, that the Yankees and Red Sox really spent a fortune in those areas to unearth whatever Mookie Betts and whatever, bringing El Duque over on a boat 25 years ago, stuff that the Orioles wouldn't do.
Right, and that's where, if you're looking at it from the present moving forward, that's why it is exciting to see a week ago the Orioles announced plans to build their own baseball academy in the Dominican Republic. And you see the plans for it, and it looks, I mean, it's, again, we're talking about things that aren't necessarily going to bear fruits for several years down the road, but it's what they need to do if you're going to sustain. Because as I just mentioned, you can talk all you want about spending, but you can find plenty of models where if you don't do well in all those other areas that you just mentioned, whether you're talking about good facilities for your minor league teams, you're talking about international spending, having an international presence. Like, if you don't do all those things, the payroll only takes you so far. And inevitably, then you run into issues like, say, the New York Mets have had over the last 20 years. They've spent a ton of money. What do they really have to show for it relative in comparison to some of these other organizations? So it's the whole package. But, you know, as far as the AL East and as far as how it relates to the Orioles right now, it's going to be tough. I mean, even, you know, Boston, who obviously had a terrible season last year, and, you know, the Orioles were able to sneak out of the cellar as a result. But, you know, I don't expect the Red Sox to be all that good, but they're not going to be 100 loss bad or anything like that either. So
what a mess that is. What an ish show for, you know, the sure. Red Sox quitting.
Well,
and saying, you know, we're going to take a few years off, you know, like,
yeah,
baseball's just a freaking disaster in that way. I mean, a disaster in lowering expectations.
This is why the players are so hell-bent, though, on not expanding the postseason field, because you already have, even now, your higher market teams who are using the luxury tax threshold as a hard cap. It's not a hard cap, but they're using it as that, other than, I guess, the Dodgers. And I mean, we've, you know, in recent years, I mean, the Red Sox and the Yankees have been aware of where the luxury tax threshold
all
is.
That's so intellectually dishonest. I mean, even, and it's almost gaslighting at some point, but yeah, I the part where they don't start contracts. I mean, if Adley Rutschman is ready to play at the big leagues now, they will not promote him because of service time. I mean, they have all of these hitches where they all just bang each other and they hate each other. And then, you know, when I bring really smart people on about baseball, they talk about work stoppage as like, I've never heard that. I mean, I've been hearing that since I was 13 and my old man canceled the sporting news in 1981, right?
Yeah. And I mean, as much as baseball has been able to avoid a work stoppage, you do look at post-2021, looking at the fight they had on their hands in the midst of the pandemic last year, and just looking at, what is it going to look like?
They cost themselves 40 games on the field last year by fighting with each other, right?
I mean, and I would say mainly the owners. I mean, the players, honestly, I don't take much fault at all with what their position was there. But, I mean, look at this year. I mean, how petty is it that owners are not keeping the DH in the NL this year? They used it last year. That is something that they're trying to dangle that as a carrot, that that's beneficial to the players. It's just as beneficial to the owners. Most fans, and my apologies to anyone who's an old school National League fan, if you love to see a pitcher who bats 100 and looks like a total fool going up there three times a game, and oh yeah, it gets pinch
we'll
hit
you Chris
four in the
Davis.
Fifth inning. Yeah, right. But the point is, they're so petty. I mean, this just shows how terrible the relationship is. Something that is mutually beneficial, the universal DH, good for the players for obvious reasons, keeps more David Ortiz, Nelson Cruz types playing at the end of their career. In fact, Nelson Cruz was kind of waiting. He delayed his free agency discussions with the thought of wondering if the National League was going to have a DH. So something as simple as that should be a no-brainer. I mean, we're not talking about revenue sharing percentage and, you know, all other issues that are real legitimate issues. We're talking about something that is such a no-brainer to just do it. And they can't even do that.
Well, there is no best interest in the game. It's best interest in my next negotiation.
Sure, sure.
Like, you know that, and everybody sees it. It's a game run by lawyers and a bunch of MIT nerds, and it feels that way. It doesn't feel cool.
Right.
It doesn't feel exciting. It doesn't feel hip. It doesn't feel I gotta be there. It feels like, oh, it's outside. I'll go get a beer, and I won't even know who's playing. And that's not good for them. And I've said that all along. And chasing people like me 15 years ago was not good for them long term. I'll sit up here on my little perch and I'll tiss them the whole way because they deserve that. And they're not going to get that over at the flagship where they're going to get their asses kissed for 162 games for losing 100 of them. And we'll feel good if somehow they only lose 96. If they only lose 91, it'll be progress. You know, if that's where the bar is, and that is where it is, it's going to be a fascinating year for people coming out of their shell, coming back, and they don't know what they're doing. They didn't put their spring training games on in the middle of a plague. They don't know what they're poorly yeah. run. TJ Brightman, I'm talking to you. You. So, I would just say this is a year where they could be recruiting people and they could be discounting and getting 10,000 people in the stadium every night and having it feel like people want to come and they do those silver plans and orange and all that stuff. I want to see what they do. And, you know, the Ravens are going to have the same problem. You know, when it came time for the Terps to learn how to sell tickets, they've never learned. The Orioles have never learned anything about it, how to be nice to people. And the Ravens now have empty seats, and they have to figure out how to fill them once humanity comes back. And I've always felt, and I'm an old school, get off my lawn guy, right? You have to have people interested in your sport. They have to love your players. They have to buy into the soap opera. They have to be practicing to be people like you and me that dedicate a portion of our lives to daily consumption above and beyond gambling on it. You know, like really liking it. And they've lacrosse has done a far better job in this region of making parents, kids, boys, girls, young, old. I won't say black and white because everybody's given up on black, right? These are both white sports. But they've at least recruited. And this is the Orioles' chance coming out of a plague to get people somehow bought in, and they have an outdoor thing. They have a thing that lends itself to come on down. I haven't seen an ad. I haven't heard an ad. I haven't seen anything orange. I live downtown and opening days next week. So I we'll see how it goes. But I think part of this for the summer is I want to see how they're going to operate after the plague, because they didn't operate well before the plague. I mean, so something taking them out where they are out of sight, out of mind. You know what's going on. I know what's going on. TJ Brightman thinks everybody knows what's going on. Not sure anybody really knows what's going on. You know what I mean? Above and beyond the people who already know. We already know. So they need to recruit beyond that for me. And this is a summer where they should be getting people's attention. There is no Merriweather. There isn't a whole lot to do. Your sister, your pregnant sister and her brother should want to roll down here just because they haven't gotten out of the house and they like baseball and you're their brother. I don't know that everybody's feeling that right now. We'll see. They're talking about opening day, can't wait to get there. But then there's, 80 more, hopefully with good weather like this, that good weather should just make people want to do something. I hope it's a baseball game for our sake.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I honestly think all entertainment entities are going to be facing that to some degree or another. I think it is a little more complicated right now because they can only have 25% capacity. I mean, think about it. Just from a simple supply and demand standpoint, it's a different dynamic right now. You know, 11,000 fans, under normal circumstances is abysmal attendance. 11,000 fans is a full house right now. So it is different in that way, but I hear what you're saying and I don't disagree. I mean, as challenging as it is to recruit when you do have such a fungible, it's a very fluid roster in terms of guys that are here right now, compared to guys that'll be here next year, compared to guys that'll be here hopefully in 2 to 3 years, or if it takes a little longer than that, as far as guys that are going to be pieces. You know, it's easy to sell Adley Rutschman, but Adley Rutschman's not catching behind the plate in Baltimore.
Selling him,
right?
He ain't even here yet. They haven't even put him on television for a month. I mean, well, they haven't sold him. I guess that's my point. My point is, baseball dorks know who he is. Nobody else knows who he is. Nobody. I don't even know what he looks like other than seeing a picture of him wearing a jersey to you. Like, he's not in my face, man. They haven't marketed him, and yet they're sort of trying to market him the way they did Weeders and the way you do anybody. Well, he was the 1-1 for crying out loud. They should market him.
Right. I mean, but there's only so much you can do in that way as far other than spring training games.
Well, he has to deliver. He has to get on the team and hit 312.
Sure. But your overall point, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I have major concerns about that.
Like
right.
literally, you know, to show hard work,
Well, and Well, let's take a step back. Forget about Adley Rutschman. You have a guy coming back who had stage three colon cancer last year and is your best player right now, and is a guy who has gotten some national attention because of his fight and because of the grace with which he handled that. And everyone knows that, you know, from everything we've seen of Trey Mancini, that he's a good guy and all of that, you know. So they do have that, but then you couple that with he's 29 years old, and is he going to be here at the trade deadline? After the trade deadline, is he going to be here next year? Are you going to sign him to an extension?
He's 29. Bet most people don't know that.
Well, I mean, think about it.
He's still 29.
Well, he did make his debut at the end of 2016, and he was a college draft pick who mastered every level of the minor league. So he was
feels like a rookie to me. You know what I mean? Yeah. He feels like he's 24. Oh,
it kind of speaks to how forgettable the last 4 or 5 years have been. I mean, that's just kind of where they are right now. But I don't disagree with what you say. I mean, it's something that I certainly have questions about. And to be very clear, it has been challenging to, quote, recruit people when people aren't going anywhere, you know, over the last year. You know, it's one thing to talk about watching your baseball games, but beyond that, it's not like you can have autograph signings and meet and greets in that way.
A television network dedicated to the baseball team that they didn't turn on in March.
Well, I'm talking about the last year.
You market your players by bringing them into my world.
No question.
Not my Twitter feed. My world, making me interact with the game of baseball that I fell in love with, that I was raised with, in front of me every day. Not Twitter fungos and funny memes and all of this junk that nobody young is even buying anyway, because they're not. I just keep going back to this. Your future niece or nephew is in your sister's belly. You are so close, to having a six-year-old little niece and holding that little niece or nephew's hands and putting a ball cap on him and dragging him down here. And whoever that six-year-old is, that current six-year-old or that current 10-year-old or that current 14-year-old, that current 18-year-old, or my 37-year-old kid, people have got to want it. And I'm going to continue. I'm never going to let that go, because you and I are not going to have a lot to talk about this year on a daily basis about who pitched last night or the relief pitching or whether they have a chance. We don't believe that anyway. If we do, that's good for us. If we have that problem in August, I'll accept that. But there's not going to be a pennant race here this year. So the thing I'm going to be talking about is, what are they doing? What are they doing to work to get me back? They need me and everyone like me back. Everyone Peter pissed off, everyone he called insignificant, everyone he said who had delusions of grandeur, everyone he didn't pay a bill or screwed him over or lied about him or lied to him or tried to, defame them or take away their career or every Frank Wren, every business they did dirty, all the stuff that they've done. They have a period here to try to patch that up or sell the team to someone that will. John Angelo spending a couple of hours putting his feet up with Jason Lock and Four on a podcast that nobody listened to that said nothing. That's not proactive marketing in the middle of a plague with a last place team. I hope that someone over there puts an effort in beyond the kids trying to play baseball. That's all. I want to feel a presence that they've taken the plague seriously and they want to build the franchise back. Not that they want to play better baseball and say,
but that's
look
still
at
what's
us.
Most important, though. I mean, you have to win. You have to win.
I have you to can, know who you are.
If the Ravens, if the Ravens went 2-14 every year, which is kind of where the Orioles are right now, no one would be in the stadium. They would have 20,000 people there. I mean, that's just the truth. And that's acknowledging the Ravens having
been.
But
the Ravens would draft some kid with a third pick overall because they suck. Market the hell out of that kid in May.
But that's apples to oranges. That you don't turn around a baseball team in the way that you can turn around in the NFL with the draft, where you have college-ready players who play immediately.
Just make people want to come and make
I agree with you, but
for your 6-year-old niece or nephew, an incredible experience that they want to come back. Marty Conwin, I talk about this all the time. They need repeat business. They need people to come and then want to come back. And I haven't felt that way in so long that I've been there. And I thought, What's the line from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, the Damone line? Isn't this great? you know what I mean? Like, yeah. you need to have an isn't this great. And I think you'll have that next Thursday, right? I mean, I'll have that going down there for opening day, even if there's only 11,000 people and I'm lucky enough to get a ticket. But the problem with opening day is they've had 50,000 people that have wanted to go there. At one point, they had 150,000 people. They had 50,000 people who want to go there. The next day is always 8,000 that want to go there. So I don't know that they're going to get those 50, except at a different
Although that was the same
experience.
Although that was the same thing in 1990.
And 1979.
I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, yeah. You know, there's always some of that. And again, I do come back to so much of what you mentioned, which I agree with. Let's be very clear. But so much of what you mentioned still hinges on, are they any good? And that's something that is working against them right now, which to your point is even more incentive for why you need to be working harder to recruit people. And to be very clear, you can work your butt off and they could do everything right. And they're probably still only drawing 23,000 people a night, which is still going to be pretty far down on the list of the 30 teams. But it puts you in better position then to really strike and capitalize when Adley Rutschman comes to Baltimore and when D.L. Hall and Grayson Rodriguez are top half of the rotation starters and Heston Kerstad is manning right field and hitting bombs onto Utah Street. You know, all those things that you hope as an Oriole fan will come to fruition over the next 5 years. You do want to lay to your point, lay the groundwork to start to have people at least peeking at your product. And then when it's good and when they're there and they're competing for a wild card spot in 2023, hypothetically speaking, people already have some familiarity in it and you're not starting from square one there. You're not starting from scratch there. They already know who some of these guys are. And you know, a lot of that also ties into how good of a partnership do you have with your minor league affiliates? And, you know, that's obviously been a big story with baseball having, you know, the major leagues having taken over minor league baseball and reimagined it and teams going away. And the Frederick Keys are now a college league. You know, they're not their single A affiliate. Their high single A affiliate is Aberdeen now. So, and that's not an Orioles exclusive thing. That's across baseball. But, you know, I mean, it starts at the top, but, you know, going back to what you mentioned as far as kids playing baseball as opposed to lacrosse, you know, or vice versa. I mean, there's, you know, it's an exhaustive process to want to recruit people and you have to be committed to it and you have to put in the work and you have to be willing and eager to partner with other people. And, you know, to your point that I'm not going to disagree with, the Orioles have been pretty crummy in a lot of ways.
That's what the television network is for.
Sure. Sure. I mean, you know what, why not have a minor league game of the week on Masson that showcases Adley Rutschman. I almost said Udley Rutschman.
Adley Rutschman. I like that. Rutschman. I want to use
that. Exactly. Exactly. But you know, a case where, I mean, minor league teams play lots of day games. Major league teams for the most part play night games. Why would you not have a minor league game of the week and try to show Adley Rutschman a half dozen times, you know, over the first, and you know, I mean, the minor league season's delayed. I'm kind of talking about midway through the year.
You have
a
camera in your living room. I have one in my bedroom. They have a camera in a, you know, it's not hard to put a baseball, you know, it really isn't. Like, as much as they've made it seem like, you know, landing on the lunar surface or on Mars, they had a month in Sarasota to all of these guys you're talking about that they gave innings to, that they, if they were trying to introduce these sexy new young broadcasters and the new young voices to get Nestor excited about young people broadcasting. And this girl knows her sports and this guy knows his baseball and his history. And he's the next John Miller. He's going to be your niece and nephew's next Chuck Thompson. I mean, your dad was in love with Chuck Thompson. My dad was in love with Chuck Thompson and Bill O'Donnell.
I was John Miller.
And if the game started in March, you'd listen because, like, people that listen to my show, they like me. They like the personalities. They like the people around. They like the information. They want to be knowledgeable. Luke, it's been a mess. I don't know what else to say, man. We'll get to Sammy Watkins. Well, we're going to have all season to talk about this. You know,
I want to see
improvement. And so far, so bad.
Well, that's, I mean, and the baseball side of thing, I mean, look, I'm excited to watch this outfield. You know, there are elements of this. I'm really excited to see Trey Mancini again. I'm excited to see Dean Kramer, and I assume Keegan Aiken will be up hopefully gets himself straightened out a little bit with a little more time at the alternate training camp. But you know, just to finish your thought as far as the spring and the fact that we had two games on Masson, you know, for a network that we're all paying into, you know, as cable and satellite subscribers.
Thieves.
But the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, now AT&T Sportsnet Pittsburgh is their, you know, they don't own their regional sports network. So I understand it's a little bit of a different dynamic, but very similar place the Pirates are. You know, they're not a huge market in the way Baltimore is not a huge market. Rebuilding, very few expectations, lots of roster turnover over the last few years. They had 16 games on their network. I think every one of their home spring games were on. I don't know about the road
AT&T
schedule.
AT&T realizes they, in order to get people to watch games in June, marketing them in March might help.
But just to give you an idea of how silly this is, where I live in Southern York County, Pennsylvania, you know, with my cable provider, I also get AT&T Sportsnet Pittsburgh. I was able to watch the Orioles play the Pirates in Bradenton four times on their cable network. I saw the Orioles in twice as many games on Pittsburgh's regional sports network than I did on Masson. I mean, that's just, it's unacceptable.
Shows me you're not trying. Shows
it's unacceptable.
Lazy.
I mean, again, you do
DJ
not.
DJ Brightman, talking to you.
If you look around baseball, and this is where I'll be fair, they don't have to put every game on. Very, very few teams in Major League Baseball televise road spring games. They just don't. But your home games where, you know, you kind of set up shop, you know, you have the truck, satellite, all that. You have all the cameras set up. You pay a crew. They broadcast the game basically every other day.
Why wouldn't they broadcast, take the AT&T broadcast from Bradenton and just put it on?
I don't know.
They take ESPN news. They take infomercials from French-Belgian skiing. I mean,
And I'm glad you brought that up because there have been teams. I want to say it may have been the Blue Jays a couple years ago. I mean, the Blue Jays have kind of revamped their model with Rogers, and I think they're actually going to – they might have – in Canada, you might be able to pay a la carte for Blue Jays games. I'm not positive on that. I know that's something they've been working on. I don't know if it's started yet. But whether it was the Blue Jays, the Rays, whoever it was, I do remember there was a spring because I look at this every year because, you know, the Orioles have typically had six or seven games on Masson, which is always near the bottom. And maybe there's a couple teams worse, but that's it. But there have been teams who decided we're not going to broadcast any games on our, you know, from our network. But at the very least, we are going to pick up all of those road feeds. You know, you pay whatever the nominal fee would be to the opposing team's sport, regional sports network, and you're at least showing the games that way. I mean, it's just, I was talking with a good friend of mine. She's been a Sunday plan holder in recent years, and she flat out said this spring, and she's, you know, watches just about every game. You know, she's someone who watches 130 games every season on television, or she's there on Sundays. She said, you know, between the games not being shown on Masson, and yeah, you could subscribe to MLB TV and watch some of the other feeds. She flat out said, and this is the problem, it's too much work to try to follow them this spring training. I mean, does that not say it all right there? It's too much work, too much effort for me to try to follow them. They're making it too difficult for me to engage with their product this spring. And honestly, it was like a light bulb went off, you know, a bell went off in my head saying, wow. You know, that really says something for someone who is as all in as you get as a fan without being an 81 plan game plan holder, which are, you know, businesses.
But she's been writing them a check and writing them, giving them her heart and her time and her
energy. She basically said, it's been too, I feel I've had to put in too much effort to engage in the product this spring. And I'm, you know, I mean, I don't know how many games she plans on going
to.
If she does,
that's the story of life, right? You know what I mean? Like, literally. And I felt for a long time, and that's why I've moved toward Baltimore Positive proudly, that, like, I've been doing sports for 30 years. One team threw me out. The other team I haven't seen in a year. The college down the street. Like, and they're all empty. And you and I are the only ones at the press conferences amongst a handful of people that care enough to dedicate our lives to it. It's been a plague for a year and a half. I would think that the Ravens would want Lamar Jackson on with me and John Harbaugh. We'll find out. I don't think everybody's knocking on the door, but you were Steve Bisciotti, by the way, while we're on this. I'll get to Sammy Watkins, but like hiding seems to be like okay lately for sports owners. It's not okay for me. And that's on either side of the parking lot, as I would say, right? I think
fair enough.
You know, they both are civic partners on the back end of a plague that is devastated my city, devastated it. I walk around here every day. So got a lot of millionaires, got a lot of billionaires. You got people running around with money, got a nice legacy here. I'm going to ask the Janet Jackson question. What have you done for me lately that is going to warrant 162 nights of watching this or my money or my time and the $12 beers because I loved Cal Ripken. Or I loved Brady Anderson or whatever that thing that's now 3 decades. You know, we're now 20 years out on Cal not playing, and he's still not managing the Nationals, although people are rumoring that. Luke, I'll give you want more oxygen to talk more baseball. Is there anything else you want to throw in before the season begins on Thursday? You got an official win-loss or anything?
I think I'd said to you a few weeks back, I think I said 95 losses just – Because
you're being nice. You know, you're trying to.
I don't think that's being all that nice. But anyway, all of the negativity that we just mentioned, and I don't even want to say negativity. A lot of it's just
honesty,
stating facts, and being honest, and feelings that a lot of, you know, I mentioned one of my close friends who loves the Orioles. She's frustrated with so much of what we just laid out. But I am looking forward to a new season. I do think there are fun players to watch on this team. I'm really looking forward to watching Ryan Mountcastle and Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins and Keegan Aiken once he, I assume, is back in Baltimore after he gets himself straightened out. But Dean Kramer, you know, there are guys to, and of course, Trey Mancini. I mean, that goes without saying. There are guys that I am really intrigued by on this baseball club right now that some of them that I just mentioned may not be around 2-3 years from now because they might be trade pieces or whatever. But I do think if you're willing to, you know, all those issues that we just mentioned aside, if you are investing some time, it doesn't have to be every night. But
well,
if you're
going to invest Thursday, they play on opening day. I'm going to put it on, see who's broadcasting. Oh, Scotty and Ben, and you know, teach me who these guys are.
Sure.
I'm assuming they haven't been running around Florida learning who they are either. So, you know, there is no cohesion in any of this, and there's certainly no routine that the whole world knows they're going to be there on Thursday, and that this feels like what your father and my father would recognize as opening day, right?
Sure.
We'll see. And then there's next Thursday when the people come back and they sell tickets. I want to see what the bike feels like 2-3 weeks from now. Not the record, because I don't think they're going to win. And if they're 6-8 or 6-12, I want to see if people are paying attention and if people are going to the games and it's showing up on my timeline. And it's got a vibe to it. If it has a – I don't know whether it hasn't had a vibe in a long time. I'm waiting for that to change, you know, for when the vibe turns. And I thought maybe the plague could be part of that in an outdoor place that people used to like to go.
Yeah, and like I said, I think so much of that's complicated to gauge just because of the limited capacity. I think that's just the truth. And there's going to be more demand just because – people haven't gone to a baseball game in some cases 2 years.
That's my point.
But
is there? You said there's going to be.
There will be.
Okay.
But at the same time, you only have a quarter of the product. You know, assuming, and look, maybe they're at 50% come June, and maybe they're at 100% capacity by September. Who knows? But if we're going off of a quarter capacity, you do have a smaller amount of product available, smaller number of tickets available. So I think there will be demand. But how much of that demand is just doing it for the sake of doing something in the way that you go to a concert, but you're not necessarily going to that venue every single week for every single show that's on. So it'll be interesting. And I think, again, I think this goes so far beyond the Orioles. I think it's so many different venues, so many different forms of entertainment that have been shuttered or dramatically reduced over the last calendar year. It is going to be interesting to see how quickly people come back. And, you know, I think, for as much as we're excited about vaccines and things, you know, of that nature and numbers going down, which they will continue to go down as vaccine numbers go up, but you're still going to have a lot of people who are going to make personal decisions as far as when they're ready to go back to the ballpark, just like when they're going to be ready to go to a restaurant or whatever. So there's just, I mean, there are a lot of factors at work here that's going to make it really tough to really gauge, but I totally 100% agree with you. The Orioles, they need to work harder to recruit people. And that's going to be something that needs to start now, not when Adley Rutschman's hitting 30 home runs 3 years from now and they're in the wild card race then. If you're only starting then at that point in time, it's too late.
Luke Jones is Baltimore Luke at LukeatWNST.net. I won't bitch about the Orioles every day. I have other things on my mind now. But we've got great guests all along the week involving baseball, Hall of Fame conversations, old school stuff. I've gone to the back of the rack to try to entertain everyone. If you need me, Ness at BaltimorePositive.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. Big thanks to our friends at Wise Markets for sponsoring us and being a part of what we're doing here. We're going to be part of the Baltimore Positive Message with our friends at Wise, getting out in the community and sharing some great stories and eating better and spending less. We are WNST.net, AM 1570 Taos in Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore Positive.